What if your top salesperson was 1,000 times more efficient? And what if a limitless digital workforce helped your number one find leads? A super team working 24/7 on their behalf. Thinking, acting, and solving complex tasks so more deals closed. What if with every sale, each customer felt like they were the only customer? That would be one very efficient sales leader. Now, imagine if every person on your team worked to the power of 1,000. They can with Agentforce, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Nick Lloyd, the author of the new book, The Western Front, the story of the Great War, 1914 to 1918, and trench warfare. We go now to September 1915, the Second Battle of Champagne. The French go on the offensive. And what I learned from you, Nick, in your explanation of these events, the casualty rates are very high here, September 25th to October 6th, 1915, is that both sides, Falkenhayn commanding the Germans and Joffre commanding the French, both sides have an ability to understand that you cannot break through. That every time you think you're making a breakthrough to range behind the enemy and turn his corner, there'll be a second and third and a fallback defense because it's not siege. It is not siege combat. What does that mean to them when they say this isn't siege mentality?
I think it's a realization that they can't break through in the way that they imagine that they would. And I think all of the commanders on all of the sides are trying to work out, you know, how you can fight, how you can win. And most of them see trench warfare as essentially a kind of anomaly, as a strange situation that will only be temporary. And what you need to do is you need to mass combat power in certain key sectors and essentially drive it home as hard as you can to break that front line, that front series of trenches, and then push reinforcements in and through, and then that will essentially shatter trench warfare, and then movement will reoccur. And then once movement reoccurs, you can have a decisive battle. So, you know, the early part of the war, they try and do this, and ultimately throughout 1915, the Allies try to do this, they can have local breakthroughs, they can gain little bits of ground here and there, but they're not able to do that grand shattering breakthrough. And the September-October 1915 battle is where they put everything in. They put everything they've learned, they mass forces in Champagne. And again, they can gain a mile or two, but they just can't break the trench deadlock in the way that they had hoped. And after that, I think there's a growing recognition that breaking through cannot be achieved, at least in the foreseeable future. So I think this is what makes the Western Front so interesting, is that you see commanders trying to work out what they can't do, what they can do. And often their responses are quite logical. But of course, giving up the idea of a breakthrough is quite a difficult one for many commanders to grapple with, as well as politicians, because the overriding, you know, mission is to liberate French territory, is to get the Germans off French land. And they simply can't do that in the way that they'd imagined. And that's one of the key stories of the book, is the different responses and the different developments that they undergo in order to try and find a way to win. And it's not obvious and it's not simple. And I think some of the criticisms of the Western Front commanders are there was another alternative way. And, you know, in many cases, it was always going to be extremely difficult, bloody. And whatever progress the Allies might make, the Germans will respond. And there's this constant evolution. So whereas the French have managed to break the first line, the Germans then build a second and a third line. And they thicken that up and they put more artillery, more machine guns, more barbed wire. You know, the Allies use more artillery, and then the Germans then essentially, instead of having one line, they have a whole zone of, you know, of pillboxes and this kind of thing. So there's a constant evolution, and you see that through the book. And I think that is one thing that I think it's really important that people understand about this war.
After Champagne, that's when French goes and Haig takes over. After Champagne, that's when Falkenhayn recognizes that he has someone who is brilliant in defense named Losberg. I noted Lusberg because he will come back later. He gives the die-in-place order to the Third Army. The other general I noticed was from the French side, Castelnau. I liked Castelnau. Why is that? Why did you make me like him, Nick? What about him?
I think he's quite a warm individual. He's quite a, you know, he's got some charisma about him. He becomes Joffre's chief of staff. He's a man that, deeply religious. He has a friar that sort of ministers to him on the battlefield. And he's a man that loses 3 sons in the war. So I think Castelnau is an example of a senior commander who really personally feels the desolation and horror of war. And I think too often, certainly in the British popular perception, the cliches of the war, these generals, they're black and white photos, they're old men, they're bearded men, they just seem cardboard cutouts. And I really wanted to try and bring them to life and see these were humans, these were individuals with families, with backgrounds. In many cases, were deeply, horrified at what they were having to do, but had to do it nonetheless. And I think appreciate, and again, many of them made a lot of mistakes. So I think appreciating that in a warmer, more direct sense was really important to me. And Castelnau is one of those characters where you kind of root for him because he seems like he is a good individual. He's a man that, does his best. And we can talk about the other generals as well. So there are characters I liked and I warmed to as I wrote the book. There's others that I was never that sure of. I leave it up to the readers to have their own favorites. And, I have my own favorites. And, sure. I warmed to some as we went through. And I think that was a really important part of the book for me.
We're going to the battles. Verdun and Somme are twinned in Nick's presentation. The Western Front is the book. Nick Lloyd is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.